The Word of Mouth podcast is brought to you by
Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community.
With convenient locations throughout northern New England.
World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more.
Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
Word of Mouth.
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 Word of
Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Back in 1989, the rapper Chuck D called rap music Black America's TV station. Especially in its early days, hip-hop artists boldly critiqued political and economic oppression, along with their unabashed proclamations of wealth and bravado. Billionaire and reality TV star Donald Trump became a symbol of the latter. Hip-hop artists dropped his name in songs and praised his wealth, luxury, and power.
Next time you see me, I have money like Donald Trump. I'm off the easy. It could be night, day. I'm still creeping.
Now his name is coming up again.
I'm about to turn Black Panther. Don't let Donald Trump win that cancer. He's too rich. He ain't got the answers. He can't make decisions.
Allison McCann is a visual journalist for 538, and she wanted to get a read on how all the major candidates were represented in hip-hop songs, especially whether hip-hop lyrics reflected Trump's shift from high-rolling businessman to politician, famous for controversial statements on race, immigration, and Muslims. Allison McCann, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
So why hip-hop lyrics as an indicator?
I think you kind of hinted at it, too, that I think hip hop is sort of unique in it, in its criticisms of not just politicians, but, you know, celebrities and other types of people in positions of power. To me, it's a unique genre of music in that it is very, you know, quick to criticize and quick to sort of weigh in on topics that are going around in ways that I don't think other genres of music do.
We use the lyrics annotation site Genius to find references to Trump and to Hillary Clinton from the database of songs. How many of them mention Trump?
I believe it was 266 songs dating back to 1989 was the earliest one that I found.
Well, let's hear a clip from Lies by the Fat Boys in 1989.
Boy, I got money like Donald Trump.
Yeah, right.
Your body go for 100, homeboy, you're in a slump.
So they're taking down someone for boasting about their wealth, like Donald Trump. So is that mainly the Trump characterization we get in hip hop?
Absolutely. That's been, you know, the Trump characterization, I guess, up until last year. The number of references to his wealth was just over 100. And to the Trump Tower brand, I think, was 68 songs. And that's, you know, put that in context, someone like Clinton has only had about 20 political references in the course of her, you know, political lifetime. So you can tell that Trump is far greater in his wealth and Trump Tower.
Yeah, it's like oftentimes they're saying, like, we're hanging out with Trump and Trump Towers.
Yeah, I think Trump Tower just became a shorthand for like being a very cool place to be, or even when it wasn't. Like, it's funny to me that it's still like in the last year or two, there are Trump Tower references. And I'm like, is that still like the best hotel chain in hip hop? But who knows?
Well, in the introduction, we heard Lil Wayne. He was bragging in this Juvenile song. What's up with that? And then YG and Nipsey Hussle. A song that I can't say the first word on the radio. Let's just say F Donald Trump, or let's just say FDT for this one. That one dropped in April, and I was looking for it on Spotify. I found three more artists put out the same song or the same song title. Think that's a trend?
I'm surprised there are only three, I guess. You know, when I first heard that song in April, I was pretty, you know, surprised to be hearing such explicit anti-Trump lyrics. But then once I had all this data, it was, hey, there have been artists since the 90s, like The Coup and others, that have sort of been questioning Trump's role in business and now in politics. So it wasn't quite as rare as I originally thought.
Well, let's dig into that in a minute. But I'm wondering about Hillary Clinton, who's been in the public eye since the early days of hip hop. Is she references specifically back then, or is it Bill Clinton, the president?
So we removed any references that were explicitly about Bill because we did want to focus just on Hillary, but we kept sort of broadly the Clinton family, you know, anti-Clinton as this sort of group. So yeah, they also had their sort of own long history of hip hop. They had been mentioned in, I think it was 92 songs back to 1993. And that includes, yeah, Hillary and Clinton family, but not just Bill.
Well, here's a clip from Ludacris's Let's Stay Together.
If Will and Jada can do it, then why can't we? Hillary's still with Bill Clinton.
not an altogether positive portrayal of Hillary Clinton. We know that women haven't always done well in hip hop. Do you think that's indicative in the mentions of Hillary Clinton in the songs that you looked at?
Yeah, we you know, tried to loosely classify all the songs as either positive, negative, or neutral to the best of our ability. And about a third of all references to Hillary and the Clinton family were negative, compared to, I think, you know, less than a quarter of Trump's. So she definitely has fared worse in hip hop, I think, being a woman and being, you know, associated with Bill during his presidency. But it is starting to change a little bit, I think, in the past year or two. I found a couple references that were a little, you know, more excited about the possibility of a female president. I think Little B, the Bass God, was one of those.
So when did references to Trump begin to change in hip hop lyrics, from the kind of, you know, hanging out with him at the Trump Towers to a less positive look?
So that turned for us, I guess we saw that happening right around the start of 2015. Before that year, he'd only received 8 negative references in total. But over the last year and a half, that number has, I think, more than quadrupled, and it's up to about 34 negative references. So the turn has been swift and big, we've only seen in, I guess, you know, 16 months of Trump's, you know, sort of foray into politics. And we're already seeing that hip hop is, you know, sort of quick to change their tune.
We're talking with Allison McCann, a visual journalist for 538. She and her colleagues surveyed lyrics of hip hop songs, searching for mentions of candidates Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton to see how they respectively have been and are being portrayed. The name of her article tells us a little bit about the findings. Hip hop is turning on Trump. Are there any specific lyrics critiquing or referencing Trump policy, or maybe rather than policy, I should say statements?
I think the FDT clip that you played is the most explicit, and it's, you know, sort of saying, I'm surprised the Nation of Islam hasn't killed you. He references a lot about his, you know, YG is very close with the Hispanic population in Southern California. So he talks a lot about, you know, sort of, if you come at, you know, Hispanics, then I'm going to come back at you too. So yeah, I think YG's song is definitely the most critical of the things that Trump has been saying.
I also was looking through for negative references for Trump on your infographics. Chris Webby says, you'll never see it like Donald Trump on a prayer mat. And this is from T.I.'s remix of the Anderson .Paak track Come Down from 2016.
I fantasize shooting Trump down, a shot for every black man who got gunned down by the police with no conviction, so they run round. When we protest, they tell us pipe down for Trayvon and Mike Brown. CNN wanna make it black white, cause we hit the action with a black light. Man,
so what did you hear there from T.I.? Very specific kind of dig at Trump.
Yeah, absolutely. That one was a really good example of sort of this pointed, you know, reference to black protesters at his events and being kicked out. And I think that's just pretty incredible to have sort of hip hop responding to events that are happening, you know, a month or 2 months ago. To me is what makes hip hop so interesting.
Well, there has been a critique of rap that political content has withered somewhat since the days, you know, when NWA and Public Enemy were attacking white racism, you know, Fight the Power, as it's become more commodified and corporatized is the criticism. What did you observe? Did you see any real shift there?
Yeah, I guess that's sort of what I was talking about before a little. And I actually spoke with Migos. They're a group from Atlanta who had, I think they had 6 mentions to Trump and often were very positive in them. And I kind of asked, you know, what does Trump represent in your music? And they were, you know, very like, he's a useful shorthand. He's, you know, the things that we want to represent of being rich and worthy. But at the same time, they were very quick to say, we don't support his politics. You know, we do not think he should be president. And, you know, now we are going to, they were saying, you know, they were working on an upcoming song and they would reference him politically. And I kind of asked, well, isn't that a little bit hypocritical? And they were, you know, like, no, it's very easy for us to separate, you know, these two things. So I do think it is super interesting to have this commodified Trump to exist at the same time with political Trump, and hip hop is complicated like that, I guess.
Allison McCann, a visual journalist for 538. Thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Now you find a link to read her article, Hip Hop is Turning on Donald Trump. The link is at our website, wordofmouthradio.org. This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. When you're far from home without friends, life can lose some of its luster. Pair that with having little to no money and freshly graduating from college, and you've got a recipe for some serious desperation. So when Maya Goldberg-Safer was offered a babysitting gig, you'd think she'd have jumped at the opportunity. Then she met Louis. The 7-year-old was a tornado of destruction, but also charisma. This is a story of unexpected friendship and following it wherever it takes you.
The summer I met Louis, I was living alone in an attic, far from home, in the house of my second cousins at least once removed. It was my just got out of college, don't want to go back home move. I had a part-time unpaid internship and no job. My cousins, world-class scientists at the University of Chicago, were always generous and kind, but there could be no stopping it. I felt wildly adrift and bluntly alone.
Ah!
Stop.
Ah!
Then I met Louis.
What?
The first time I saw him, he hurled down the stairs, tore open the door, and stared at me. "What do you want?" he spit out. What I thought I wanted was a job as his nanny. But as soon as I stepped forward, Louis ran away screaming.
Get out of here!
Inside, he was climbing the couches and pawing his mother's face with his feet. She didn't seem to notice. Then Louis scooped their giant black and white cat off the floor like he was getting ready to toss a baby.
Kitty, 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 cat.
I left with no intention to return.
Hi, this is Maya.
But then Louis's mom called. "We know you're thinking about moving out of the neighborhood," she said, "but I just wanted you to know that we really loved you." How could I refuse that? I needed friends anywhere I could find them, even if one was a child who seemed like he'd spent the last 6 years living alone in the wilderness. But that wasn't really who he was.
Okay, so you get the kettle, the nice little kettle. You open it, you pour out all the old, disgusting water. You fill it up. Well, not all the way to the top. Just about where you think your cup of tea is gonna be. And you turn it on and you wait. Wait, and you just wait. This is so easy.
The key thing about this babysitting gig was that I didn't actually have any work to do. Louis didn't have homework and the house had no rules.
I search on YouTube.
Mario Tetris.
And find funny videos.
It's like a mixture of Mario and Tetris. It is an epic game.
As long as his parents came home and Louis was still alive, I'd done my job. All I had to do was follow him around. He showed me his apartment, his school, and the neighborhood.
How much more school do you have left?
I have this week and then next week and then off.
Louis loved words like gosh dang it and idiot face, which he hurled at other people as though hacking through brush.
Because these little brats are getting on my nerves, jerks.
But Louis was also 7 and certain things never failed to make him giggle.
Hello.
All dogs, especially ones with whiskers. And graffiti on stop signs, and being called the devil, which he thought was hilarious. He also loved food. He loved chocolate. He loved the smell of chocolate. He loved bowls of salad, each individual leaf.
I'm about to interview this chicken.
So you're going to interview the chicken?
I'm going to interview the chicken rice. Yeah. Oh, this chicken. Woof! That was a ride into heaven. I could admire this all day without stopping. Maya, this is a really special day.
Okay, so we have to do more?
Yeah.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot!
No! Whoever gets to 3 first wins.
In winter, we played rock, paper, scissors and danced wildly to Billy Joel.
Danced around for no reason.
We stomped around the hardwood floors and shook salt around the kitchen.
3, 2, 1, go!
We climbed and wrestled and burped.
Are you gonna splash through the puddle? Do you ever go around puddles?
No. I'm always so curious about everything. Look at you, respect my curiousness.
But Louis also told me he didn't have friends at school. His mom worried about it too. Was he too mean or too weird? Do the other kids just not understand him?
Do you think you're different than other people in your class, or the same?
Very different. I'm much more weird and stuff.
What do you think's the weirdest thing about you?
I don't really play a lot.
Although he never said it, I was pretty sure I'd become Louie's best friend.
Maya? My sidekick for right now?
And he'd become mine too.
So she's asking me for, guidance?
Louie had chosen me, not to work for him, but to love. And this made my new job an aberration, a strange kind of grace, a small miracle we had accidentally invented.
It reminds me of how lucky we are to have tea. I mean,
what do you think we should be most grateful for in our lives?
Life. Life. Yeah. Most grateful for life. Would you like to be a hand? Would you, for who you are? Would you like to be an orange that's bound to be picked and eaten? Would you? Would you like to be a big oak tree who's bound to be chopped down? Would you like to be a kitty who's on the street? Would you like to be a garbage can full of trash and junk? Would you like to be a booger stuck in someone's nose? Would you like to be smoke who dissolves in the air? Would you like to be an onion? Would you like to be some coffee? Would you like to be a teapot? Would you like to be a pan? Would you like to be a calendar? Would you like to be a dog? Yes. Dogs are awesome. They're furry and cute and they have great noses. Okay, go get me a cup.
Why?
I need to pour the hot water. I need to pour the hot water.
Is it ready?
Yeah. I know it's ready because this turned off. Do you want any sugar in it?
No, thank you.
Milk?
But here's the thing. At the beginning of the year, when Louie's mom called to convince me to work for her family, she told me something else, too. It will be totally temporary, she'd said. Don't worry, we're moving to France in a year. And at the time, I remember looking around my empty attic room, feeling totally relieved.
Maya, talk about how you feel.
I feel...
It's been 7 months since Louie's family left for Paris. I've made other friends and moved into a legit apartment, with Craigslist roommates, of course.
Well, one half of my brain knows that people are always looking for someone that they really get along with and love and who really loves them back, right?
Yeah, definitely.
But, well, I keep listening to his voice. I have him on my recorder, in my iTunes, on my phone. So we hang out all the time, really. But I miss my best friend a lot.
Well, the following question is, will Maya ever get her friend back? Will she ever get her nice friend back?
In his most recent email to me, sent from his family's new apartment in Paris, Louis wrote, "Hi, Maya. Sup?"
You have to find the person in the world. If you got across the world, who cares? You just need that person. If you're in America and the person is in England, you can cross to England or whatever country she's in that you're not in. And
do you think you'll find a person, or have you found them?
It's my cat. It's my cat. I have, like, two. So they can be, like, different genders. Older than you, younger than you. More narrow-minded than you. Less interested in this thing than you. I have, like, two. My cat and Maya and, yeah. I have two.
I used to watch Louis running free in the park, chasing treasures in the grass, his head waving up and down like a tail. I like to watch him from the white stone benches, as boundless as the dogs we admired so much. I wondered if he'd always remember me at that time, because that's how I'd always remember him. Louis at 7 years old, flying through the grass, humming wildly, aloud, but never quite for me.
The Sitter Dispatch was produced by Dennis Funk and Maya Goldberg-Safer and first aired on ReSound from the Third Coast International Audio Festival.
Word of mouth!
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Scott Fallman is a computer scientist at Carnegie Mellon University, where the focus of his research is on artificial intelligence. Currently, he's working on SCONE, an open-source knowledge-based system. Now, to be honest, I have no idea what that means, and the real reason that we asked Fallman to speak with us is not his impressive career in AI, but because of something he invented in 1982 that is now used about 6 billion times a day. And this thing? This will be his legacy, no matter what else he accomplishes, and will probably be the thing that the world remembers him for. So, Scott Fallman, can you tell our listeners what it is that you are credited with inventing?
Well, back in 1982, we had very crude social media in those days. Basically, you could send email to a bulletin board where everyone could read it, and it was text-only email. And we were trying to find a way to indicate sarcastic comments, because, of course, there's no tone of voice in those kind of messages or anything like that. We didn't have any graphics, so we were trying to think what the marker should be for jokes. I'm only kidding. And I proposed colon minus parenthesis in a post to this local bulletin board, and that seems to have gone viral on us.
So you created the emoticon.
Well, I created the smiley face. A lot of people want to fight over what the first emoticon is. I think maybe it was the exclamation mark. But I proposed the colon minus parenthesis one way for smiling and the other way for frowning, and that seems to have been what caught fire and mutated and led to all these other things.
This was in 1982. You were 34, relatively new there at Carnegie Mellon. Did you have any idea what you had created?
No, we were having a stupid discussion about what would happen if the elevator went into free fall, and somebody said, okay, now due to these experiments, the elevator's been damaged, and somebody else got bent out of shape by that. And, so this was just something I tossed off in 10 minutes in the middle of that silly discussion. We didn't even save a copy. I thought it would, amuse the 10 or 20 people listening in, and that would be that.
Well, somebody has gone back to dig out a copy from 19 September of 1982. Of your proposal of the following character sequence for joke markers, and we have the colon, the minus, and the parenthesis, the smiley face. But you never got certainly paid for this, did you?
No, that's my little gift to mankind. If you think about it, if it cost people 5 cents to use this or something, then nobody would use it, or if you had to get my permission. So it had to be free. I mean, there was no way to make money from it that I could see.
But do you have any regrets at all about at least not realizing that you could monetize it, as were the terms back then, to capitalize it or control it perhaps somehow?
Well, again, at the time, I never thought it was going to last longer than a day. And then it spread through Carnegie Mellon, and I thought, oh, this is going to last a week. And I never thought that, 33 years later, this thing would have spread around the world, morphed into these things. But I used to always say I never made a dime from this, and then somebody came up and gave me a dime, so I'd have to stop saying that. So now I just say I never made $1 million from it, and I hope
you're
somebody
waiting for
tried
that.
To shut me up. Yeah.
Well, you said these things. Do you not like the contemporary emoji?
I'm not crazy about the graphical ones. There was a little challenge in trying to say something amusing with just typographical characters and make, different faces and characters and so on. And I think the graphics just kind of stomp on all that. If they make people happy, great. More power to them. Just don't send me one. The one thing I do resent is when software jumps in and I've sent somebody a text emoticon and the software jumps in and turns it into one of those graphical things.
Oh, right, when you do a colon.
Without my
permission. I see, right, exactly. Is there any way to prevent that? You're the computer scientist.
Yeah, well, it's one software program after another, and most of them you can disable that.
Well, Dr. Vollmann, I started this conversation talking about your legacy. Does it bother you that you're going to be remembered or talked to or about the emoticon?
Well, you know, this was 10 silly minutes of my life 34 years ago, and it's kind of weird that this is probably the most famous thing I'll ever do, even if I make major inroads into the study of artificial intelligence. However, it's kind of fun to be something, to be a little bit famous for something.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's been a fun ride. I've been invited to places to give talks on this, and some of them have been fun places. I've met a lot of people. If I'm going to be remembered for something completely trivial, at least it's a happy something trivial.
Well, it does seem to like history remembers a good story. So is the creation of the smiley face just a better story or maybe easier story to tell than that of your work in artificial intelligence?
Yeah, it takes me a little while to explain what I'm doing in AI, and it depends on the educational level of who's listening and, you know, how much they know about computers to begin with.
Okay, so assume that I'm a third grader in science. What would you like to tell me about SCONE, the program that you are working on?
Well, what I've been doing pretty much my whole career is trying to get some kind of common sense into these systems. So they're AI systems that do impressive things, but they're mostly things people go away to college to learn, you know, chess and solving complex linear equations and nonlinear equations and solving chemistry problems and so on. But we still don't have intelligent programs that know what a table and a chair is and that you sit on one and you're supposed to, you know, put stuff on the other, maybe eat from it.
Hmm.
That it's a good idea to open a door before you go through it, which we have to tell the robots. So what all people have by the time they're, you know, 5 years old or certainly 10 is this huge store of knowledge about the world. You know, different jobs, different kinds of people. What are the rules for talking to your elders? And that differs from one culture to another, which you learn later. So there's when we say common sense, it's really all the knowledge we have in common. But you can't just plug in Wikipedia to an AI system and have that be good enough because the knowledge has to get into the game. It has to play a role in all your thinking, and it has to be accessible to you when it's needed and not get in your face the rest of the time.
You spend a
so
lot.
So I'm trying to build a system that will support that and people can use and put into their various AI programs or even not AI programs and make them more sensible, easier to deal with. And we're trying to get them to understand natural language, you know, simple English.
You've been working at this for a long time. Do you think you'll see that, realize it in your lifetime?
Well, it depends on my funding, but yeah.
Well, I actually read something about your funding, that it's about to expire. Now, what does that mean and what
then
is next?
The current grant we're on is about to expire, and we're talking with those folks about maybe the next grant. But it depends if the government gets shut down and all of those things.
Hmm.
This is mostly federal research money.
Don't they know who you are?
Well, there are a lot of smart people working in this field, and right now this is not the most fashionable kind of research. Everybody's working on machine learning and big data you may have heard about.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of AI I'm working on is just what people can do, you know. A lot of the field is off doing all these things that no human can actually do, and I'm trying to get the stuff that every normal person just does without even thinking about it.
You said earlier it's nice to be a little bit famous. Is it better than to be in the history books for something you're not entirely proud of or take complete ownership of than to be left out of them entirely?
Well, it's my goal to be in the history book for something else also, you know, which is why I'm still working at this. I'd like to make some real inroads into artificial intelligence and make some lasting difference in the field. I've done some things that are, you know, of some value to the field, but I think what I'm working on now is maybe the big home run.
To that I say, colon, minus, parentheses.
which kind of parenthesis?
The parenthesis
happy
that,
one?
That looks happy.
Okay, that's good.
Dr. Scott Fahlman, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Right, thank you.
Scott Fahlman, he's a research professor at Carnegie Mellon University and inventor of that little smiley face that became the emoji. You can read a portrait of him from Narratively. The link is at wordofmouthradio.org.